Welcome to each one this morning. Blessing to be gathered together in this way. Thank you for those thoughts, Jacoby. I believe if we have an eternal perspective, like you mentioned, it pretty much answers. We'll take care of what I have. Not sure if this is a familiar song to me. It's not coming to me, but we're just going to read it. If Uriah knows it and wants to sing it later, he can. When the heart with joy overflowing sings a thankful prayer, in thy joy, O let thy brother with thee share. When the harvest sheaves and gather, fill thy barns with store, to thy God and to thy brother give the more. If thy soul with power uplifted, yearn for glorious deed, give thy strength to serve thy brother in his need. Share with him thy bread of blessing, sorrow's burden share. When the heart is enfolds a brother, God is there. Especially when what I'm looking at here is verse 2 here. When the harvest sheaves and gather, fill thy barns with store, to thy God and to thy brother give the more. At harvest season, if we would all be farmers, this would be quite easy to make practical. But many of us are gardeners. So we see this quite different than the rich man who said he has nowhere to bestow his goods, so he's going to tear down his barns and build greater. It's a quite different attitude here than I see there. What is my perspective of being a steward of God's blessings? The title of my message this morning is, Am I a Cheerful Giver? Last year, I preached a message titled, Do I Have a Right View of Money and Wealth? In that message, I did not spend much time on the giving part. So this morning, I'd like to look at giving. And I'll be quick to say I don't feel like I have this figured out, but I like to stimulate our thoughts, and I like to have a balanced view. I might need your help for that, because I probably don't. And I want to be also quick to share that giving can be a lot more than money. There's a lot of ways we can, and depending on where you find yourself, say you are a teen youth girl working in homes, I wouldn't expect that you're going to have too much to give financially. That's okay. You're actually giving a lot just by being willing to help serve. So I don't, anyway, in sharing this, while I'm looking more at financially giving, I don't want anyone in that situation to feel guilty. I'd like to read a couple verses from 1 Timothy 6. Verses 17 to 19. Paul here to Timothy gives a charge, like to consider what he has to say here. Charge them that are rich in this world that they be not high-minded, nor trust in uncertain riches, but in the living God, who giveth us richly all things to enjoy. That they do good, that they be rich in good works, ready to distribute, willing to communicate, laying up in store for themselves a good foundation against the time to come, that they may lay hold on eternal life. He says here, that they be rich in good works, ready to distribute, willing to communicate. And I would say probably most of us fall into this. If you take our world perspective, most of us probably fall into this category. We tend to be pretty narrow-minded with our vision, but if we could view the world in its entirety, we would be pretty high on the list. So here it says that they're to be willing to communicate, willing to distribute, willing to share. The question I have is, how do others see me? Am I generous or am I a taker? I believe it's something to consider. You can, and probably any one of us can think of relating to a someone who is successful financially, and it seems like their testimony is they're trying to help where they can, or they're, you might say, well, that person's really generous. Or there's the other, that you might say you don't want to do any business dealing with them, or you will be taken across. It's the opposite of a generous person. In Ecclesiastes 5, he that loveth silver shall not be satisfied with silver, nor he that loveth abundance with increase. This also is vanity. When goods increase, they are increased that eat them. And what good is there to the owners thereof, saving the beholding of them with their eyes? The sleep of a laboring man is sweet, whether he eat little or much. But the abundance of the rich will not suffer him to sleep. Just ponder that a little bit. But the abundance of the rich will not suffer him to sleep. Am I so entangled with the world that I can't sleep? I'm not meaning that we won't find ourselves in a time of hardship or we go through those times where we might struggle, but am I so entangled with wealth that I'm not sleeping because of my investments? And he gives more, he gets more practical here. There is a sore evil which I have seen under the sun, namely riches kept for the owners thereof to their hurt. But those riches perish by evil travail, and he begetteth his son, and there is nothing in his hand. As he came forth of his mother's womb, naked shall he return, to go as he came, and he shall take nothing of his labor which he may carry away in his hand. And this also is a sore evil, that in all points as he came, so shall he go. And what profit hath he that hath labored for the wind? And Job said the same words, the way we came is the way we're going to go. We came with nothing, we're going to leave with nothing. But then here in verse 16, and what profit hath he that hath labored for the wind? Labored for no purpose. Simply on myself, living for myself, or simply not to... Yeah, what a sad state to come to the end of your life and realize that I have labored for the wind. Now, we're going to read a number of verses. 2 Corinthians 8 and 9 speak into this quite a bit. I think we're going to just read this passage together. Why don't we stand? I'll read one verse, and you can read the next one. We'll continue down through chapter 8 and 9 here, just to get the context. Moreover, brethren, we do you to wit the grace of God bestowed on the churches of Macedonia. For to their power I bear record, yea, and beyond their power they were willing of themselves.
Praying us with much entreaty that we should receive the gift and take upon us the fellowship of ministering to the saints.
And this they did, not as we hoped, but first gave their own selves to the Lord and unto us by the will of God.
Insomuch that we desired Titus, that as he had begun, so he would also finish in you the same grace also.
Therefore, as ye abound in everything, in faith and utterance and knowledge, and in all diligence, and in your love to us, see that ye abound in this grace also.
I speak not by commandment, but by occasion of the forwardness of others, and to prove the sincerity of your love.
For ye know the grace of our Lord Jesus Christ, that though he was rich, yet for your sakes he became poor, that ye through his poverty might be rich.
And herein I give my advice, for this is expedient for you, who have begun before, not only to do, but also to be forward a year ago.
Now therefore perform the doing of it, that as there was a readiness to will, so there may be a performance also out of that which ye have.
For if there be first a willing mind, it is accepted according to that man hath, and not according to that he hath not.
For I mean not that other men be eased and ye burdened.
But by an equality, that now at this time your abundance may be a supply for their want, that their abundance also may be a supply for your want, that there may be equality.
As it is written, he that hath gathered much hath nothing over, and he that gathered little hath no lack.
But thanks be to God, which put the same earnest care into the heart of Titus for you.
For indeed he accepted the exhortation, but being more forward of his own accord, he went unto you.
And we have sent with him the brother whose praise is in the gospel throughout all the churches.
And not that only, but who was also chosen of the churches to travel with us with this grace, which is administered by us, to the glory of the same Lord and declaration of your ready mind.
Avoiding this, that no man should blame us in this abundance which is administered by us.
Proving for honest things, not only in the sight of the Lord, but also in the sight of men.
And we have sent with them our brother, whom we have oftentimes proved diligent in many things, but now much more diligent, among the great confidence which I have.
Whether any do inquire of Titus, he is my partner and fellow helper concerning you, or our brethren, be inquired of, they are the messengers of the churches and the glory of Christ.
Wherefore show ye to them, and before the churches, the proof of your love, and our boasting on your behalf.
For as touching the ministering to the saints, it is superfluous for me to write to you. Yet have I sent the brethren, lest our boasting of you should be in vain in this behalf. That, as I said, you may be ready. Sorry.
Lest haply, if they of Macedonia come with me and find you unprepared, we, that we say not ye, should be ashamed in the same comfort of boasting.
Therefore I thought it necessary to exhort the brethren that they would go before unto you and make up beforehand your bounty, whereof ye had no notice before, that the same might be ready as a matter of bounty, and not as of covetousness.
But this I say, he which soweth sparingly shall reap also sparingly, and he which soweth bountifully shall reap also bountifully.
Every man according as he purposes in his heart, so let him give, not grudgingly or of necessity, for God loveth a cheerful giver.
And God is able to make grace abound toward you, that ye always, having all sufficiency in all things, may abound to every good work.
As it is written, he hath dispersed abroad, he hath given to the poor, his righteousness remaineth forever.
Now if he that ministereth seed to the sower, both minister bread for your food, and multiply your seed sown, and increase the fruits of your righteousness.
Being enriched in everything to all bountifulness, which causes through us thanksgiving to God.
For the administration of this service not only supplieth the want of the saints, but is abundant also by many thanksgivings unto God.
Whilst by thy experiment of this ministration, they glorify God for your professed subjection unto the gospel of Christ, and for your liberal distribution unto them and to all men.
And by their prayer for you, which long after you, for the exceeding grace of God in you.
Thanks be unto God for his unspeakable gift. You can sit down. There's quite a lot that we can pull from this. If I like to look here at, if you see here in chapter 8, verse 1, moreover, brethren, we do you wit of the grace of God bestowed on the churches of Macedonia. Who were the churches of Macedonia? If you look at a map, the Philippi, Thessalonica, and I believe Berea was up there. There may be, those are the ones that we know of. And it seems like what he's saying here is these churches didn't necessarily have an easy path. They were going through trials and persecutions and what. But even in that, Paul's saying they are still. In verse 3 it says, for to their power I bear record, yea, and beyond their power they were willing of themselves. They were giving what they could and beyond. It's what it's, even in their time of need, or they weren't doing prospering, so to speak. But unlike, I believe, as you look at, I'll just read down here to verse 5, and this they did, not as we hope, but first gave of their own selves to the Lord and unto us by the will of God. And I believe that's a foundation for any one of us. We first give ourselves to the Lord. If I'm completely surrendered and yielded, it's going to make this easier for me. But looking at the churches of Macedonia and then considering the Corinthians church, if you look at Corinth, of course I never visited this church, but if you consider Corinth is down there Corinth is still a city today, but in Greece, it's not quite the same place. Down next to I believe there's the Gulf of Corinth, and then there's another Gulf sitting down at the tip, Greece, and there's a gulf on both sides of them, so they got direct access to the Mediterranean. And then there's a canal, I believe, running now. There wasn't back in Bible time, canal running through there, similar to what we know of Panama. So this is Corinth was a major hub of trade. So you can imagine being a hub for water and land trade. There's a lot of wealth in Corinth. And we also know, if you look at Corinthians, there was a lot of idolatry and immorality there. There was pagan worship. Not an easy group of people to reach, but there could have, I guess looking at that, there could have been a bit of wealth at Corinth. Was that going into the church? Did these people, these Corinthians getting converted, did they have to forsake everything? Or what? I don't know. I'm just speculating. But there may have been a bit of wealth there at Corinth. It may have been a number that were successful. So that may play into what Paul's saying to them here. So you might have had a group of, you can just imagine, you might have had a group of people here that some were able to, depending on what they're doing, able to maintain their job and doing well. Others may have, if they had any pagan connection, I'm sure they had left that behind. And so you had some that may have been found themselves in a needy situation, and some were doing quite well. So quite an opportunity to share with each other, and that's what we see here Paul saying. In verse 7 here, therefore, as ye abound in everything, in faith and in utterance and knowledge and in all diligence and in your love to us, see that ye abound in this grace also. It's interesting how he calls it grace over and over again in this passage. He puts it right in there with faith, utterance, knowledge, and in all diligence, and your love to us, see that ye abound in this grace also. Puts it, not putting it at a light, putting a lot of weight on it. Now I'm just going to read down through here from verse 8 down. I speak not by commandment, but by occasion of the forwardness of others, and to prove the sincerity of your love. See, he's coming to them and sharing with them, see what the churches of Macedonia are doing. Our down below here we have Corinth, and I believe Athens is down in there as well. So he's using that to challenge them. For we know the grace of our Lord Jesus Christ, that though he was rich, yet for your sakes he became poor, that ye through his poverty might be rich. Again, speculating that these Corinthians, some of them could have been doing pretty well. And herein I give my advice, for this is expedient for you, who have begun before, not only to do, but also to be forward a year ago. Now therefore perform the doing of it, that as there was a readiness to will, so there may be a performance also out of which of that which ye have. So here he's saying, just having a will to do it isn't going to be enough, but there needs to be an action or a performance. For if there be first a willing mind, it is accepted according to that a man hath, and not according to that he hath not. That's an important one, as you'll see. We'll look at some other verses later on that say the same thing. Is God concerned about the mount, or is he concerned about our heart? Or our ability, maybe be a better word. I might not be using the right. Is he more concerned about our ability or our faithfulness? I don't know if I'm coming up with the right word to explain it properly, but what are we doing? You're doing what you can, in other words. For I mean not that other men be eased and ye burdened. You might have heard the saying, rob Peter to pay Paul. I believe that's a little bit what he's saying there. He's not wanting to put a burden on someone who is in a needy situation, maybe. But by an equality, that now at this time your abundance may be supply of their want, that their abundance also may be supply of your want, that there may be equality. Here's where I see if we would be I believe in our day it can be a little complicated, but if you go back a number of years, and it was simply more of a farming community, where if one community had enough bread, enough food, another community had a drought, there was a sharing back and forth. In our time, we might have to be a little more creative in this. But as we know, God is no respecter of persons. Is that where we find ourselves? Is it our desire that there be equality among us, not lifting ourselves up above each other? I believe it's good for us to be challenged by this. That their abundance also may be a supply for your want, that there may be equality. As it is written, he that hath gathered much hath nothing over, he that hath gathered little hath no lack. I guess, am I concerned about the needs or not? Or do we just, life go on and we forget? And we have sent with them, and here we see, I find interesting in down here talking about Titus, the way they used accountability. This wasn't a one-man show. If you look at, just read verse 21, proving for honest things, not only in the sight of the Lord, but also in the sight of men. This offering wasn't just haphazardly handled or unsure where it went, but there was accountability. And having multiple ones involved. Verse 23, whether any do inquire of Titus, he is my partner and fellow helper concerning you or our brethren, be inquired of, they are the messengers of the churches and the glory of Christ. Wherefore show ye to them and before the churches the proof of your love and of our boasting on your behalf. So he's taking this, and it's a proof of their love. What a blessing. Now, find it interesting with that. Chapter 8, he goes into chapter 9 and gets a little more practical, I believe, down to the... I'd like to... Just thought it was good. It'd be good to look at 8 a little bit before I just go into 9 here. For as touching the ministering to the saints, it is superfluous for me to write to you, for I know the forwardness of your mind, for which I boast of you to them of Macedonia. So Paul is sharing with the churches in Macedonia how these Corinthians are wanting to share, or their ability to share, but yet he's coming to them in a way that, you know, like, I want to make sure that that's where you're at. It's questioning. It's ready a year ago, and your zeal hath provoked very many. Yet have I sent the brethren, lest our boasting of you should be in vain in this behalf, that as I said, ye may be ready, lest haply, if they of Macedonia come with me and find you unprepared, we, that we say not ye, should be ashamed in this same confident boasting. So he's sharing with them how he's confident, but yet he's coming to make sure, coming ahead of time. Therefore, I thought it necessary to exhort the brethren that they would go before unto you, and make up beforehand your bounty, wherefore ye had noticed before that the same might be ready as a matter of bounty and not as of covetousness. And what he's saying there is simply that this is out of a heart to give, and not out of a demand, but rather a appeal for them to share. It's interesting what he has to say here in verse 6. But this I say, he which soweth sparingly shall reap also sparingly, and he which soweth bountifully shall also reap bountifully. So if we, if you're going to sow, if you are skimpy and you're tight with your sowing, well, you're going to have you can't expect a bountiful harvest. And he's saying the same way. Now, I don't like the idea of taking this, you know, if I give heavily, God's going to bless me with a new BMW or a, shouldn't be wanting that in the first place, but I think that's a wrong concept to think, yeah, God might provide for you in a way that you can give more. But this is not a selfish, it's not a selfish thing here, where that you decide that, you know, because I'm giving liberally that somehow God's going to bless me with all kinds of things. I think we're missing it. But rather, possibly an ability to give. If you can stay out of the way, I believe if we get in the way, I believe we, and the glory is diverted to us, we're missing it. Every man, according as he purposes in his heart, so let him give, not grudgingly or of necessity, for God loveth a cheerful giver. That's a good, how cheerful do I give? Or do I give out of obligation? Where is my heart in giving? I believe if we can come to the place, we can allow God to work that in us that we love to give, it'll, I believe, go a long way. And in verse 8, and God is able to make all grace abound, again using the word grace, toward you, that ye always, having all sufficiency in all things, may abound to every good work. God's able to supply us individually, corporately. So what I see here is we simply need the desire to give, and God will help us. He's able to make all grace abound. It's not our work. As it is written, he hath dispersed abroad, he hath given to the poor, his righteousness remaineth forever. Now he that ministers seed to the sower, both minister bread for your food, and multiply your seed sown, and increase the fruits of your righteousness, being enriched in everything to all bountifulness, which causes through us thanksgiving to God. I like how the response is here at the end of this chapter here. I think we could probably look at numerous needs that have been met over the years and see this happen. For the administration of this service not only supplieth the want of the saints, but is abundant also by many thanksgivings unto God, whilst by the experiment of this ministration, they glorify God for your professed subjection unto the gospel of Christ and for your liberal distribution unto them and unto all men. And by their prayer for you, which long after you, for the exceeding grace of God in you, thanks be unto God for his unspeakable gift. It's causing others, those around us, to glorify God. That's what I see here. So as I pondered this passage, most of us probably grew up in a situation where we've seen this practiced in some way or form or another. But have we ever lived through a economic failure? Not a little bit, maybe, but not much. Suppose we as a church would face a complete economic failure, a depression. How would this look? It's pretty easy when, or maybe it's not easy, maybe it's actually harder in the situation we find ourselves in. How will we respond? Certain areas would be hit harder than others. Certain parts of the country would be worse than others. Would we just keep on living our normal lives, or would we shift gears and change the way we live? The other thing I thought about, what are some threats the church is facing to living this out? What are some things that we face today that keep us from being able to practice this? I'm just going to open up a little bit. This is where I need some help. But I think there's things that we face that hinder us. Jobs don't always pay.
Even in America, there are people that have work and they go for their paycheck. The boss says, sorry, you need to get paid, so you don't get paid. I know I personally met a man in Tennessee who was out $100,000. He was actually working for the military. And he was a non-Christian, but me and a couple other brothers went and helped him move his shop.
I was thinking more along the lines of things that are keeping us from actually needing to share with each other. Very true. Yeah.
Another thing we do is look around us and see someone who's further ahead of us, or and feel like we're less obligated because someone else has more.
Yep. The other thing I was thinking of is, and I know some of these can be controversial subjects, but insurance, we can insure every side of us. Social security when we're old, so we quit working. And taking the sharing from the church.
Trying to put it into words, but I think it's very easy to walk past so sometimes the most needy situation because we are maybe feeling obligated or somehow we think we have another need that we ought to be fulfilling. What about that person that we drive past that's changing the tire alongside the road? Is it really important that we get to church on time, or should we help that person? And I think we need God's Spirit really to prompt us to know which of those to be helping. But I think sometimes we miss. We ought to pay more attention to the story of the Good Samaritan. I know for myself it's very easy to miss some of those opportunities because I think there's something more important.
Mm-hmm.
Just down the road, whether it's literally down the road or whether, it's easy to miss those things that are right in front of me.
Yep. Surely someone's going to meet the need, so I'm not needed. Yeah. I wonder what would happen if we as individuals could travel the world in a short amount of time. How you would find situations better off than we are, but you would find quite a few much worse off than we are. Just a perspective change. I have a few questions here I would like to look at. Should I give? Why or why not? How much should I give? I don't expect to tell you what to give, but there's some principles. And who should I give to? Should I give? I believe the answer to that is pretty simple. It's yes. But why or why not? So you might say, but I don't have much. So does that mean I can't give much, so should I not give at all? And I realize giving can go beyond. Like I mentioned earlier, it can be other ways it could simply time there. Might not be helping someone along the way. And that can be within our brotherhood as well. But there's one thing with this that has affected me, and I'm not sure if others are affected by it or not. With when you're young, you have the mentality that the older will take care of it. The ones that are 50 and above, or 40 and above, they're farther along down the road. They can take care of the. Does that work? If we just let the older folks take care of the needs, because I'm young and there's some truth to that. But what happens is if I start out with that mindset, it's going to be hard to shift gears. You're going to keep that mindset. But I believe with someone who is trying to give all along, that'll just keep coming natural. But if I think I can't, I think someday I'm going to get to a point where now I feel like I can. You'll never find a convenient time. But I'm saving to buy a house or farm. What if we all would do that? what would happen? Would be able to function? Something for us to, there's some truth to the other part too. But I don't believe we should stop. I don't believe we should use that as an excuse to not give. How much should I give? There's some of these points I sat under a speaker here about a year ago. A few of these points come from him. Can't think of his name right now. A speaker for Anabaptist Financial. I'm not taking everything he had, but there's a few thoughts that he had here. Is the one that we might have is minimal gift out of a sense of obligation. That's the one take we can have, where we're giving a little bit out of a sense of obligation. And the other could be, I will do my share. And again, this can be more ways than financial. But a heart, it's quite different between I'm going to do my share, or I'm just going to do my obligation. It's a complete different mindset. The one approach I believe a lot have taken, there might be some of you here that take that approach, it'd be the tithing. That was the Old Testament. Some would look at, and you can help me out with this, Luke 11:42. Here's Jesus contending with the Pharisees. But woe unto you, Pharisees, for you tithe mint and rue and all manner of herbs, and pass over judgment and the love of God. These ye ought to have done, and not to leave the other undone. Here they're getting real practical about every little detail. So he's pointing that out. But it's interesting, he does say here, and not to leave the other undone. So he wasn't saying that it was wrong what they're doing, but they were taking it too far. So for someone to tithe their increase, I don't see that as certainly not a wrong perspective. The only problem I would see with that is the other 90% mine, and if I'm giving 10, don't think so. And here's where I'd like to look at Luke 21. And he looked up and saw the rich men casting their gifts into the treasury. And he saw also a certain poor widow casting in thither 2 mites. Today, I believe it could be equivalent to just casting in 2 pennies. Wasn't much. And he said, of a truth, I say unto you, this is you, that this poor widow has cast in more than they all. For all these have of their abundance cast in unto the offering of God, but she of her penury hath cast in all the living that she had. I believe that should take away from any of us if we're feeling like, you know what, I'm giving a lot, I'm doing pretty good. And here again, I know he was looking at attitudes, I believe they were ringing the bell, and there was he was touching it more than the offering part. But it is, especially for the person feeling like they can't give much, this should be a comfort, or if we're giving it with a heart of desire to give, does God need amounts, I guess? Doesn't seem that way. Seems like he can use what we have. And any one of us can look at, you can look at statistics, and you know that, you know, housing is going to cost you a good percentage of your income. the largest percentage of your income for most of us. Food and clothing is going to be a smaller percentage. Your transportation, that's going to vary greatly from whether you need to keep up with your neighbors or not, how much that's going to cost you. So if you start putting in, I don't know if we have budgeters here or not, but you start putting in all your percentages, then when you come down to the end, you have a little bit left over. That's what you call your discretionary income. But someone made a statement here recently. I'm not sure if it was here or somewhere else I was that caught my attention. He said, If I spent more on recreation than I give, I got things mixed, or to the point that I should reconsider. That was a good challenge for me. And I didn't spend a lot of time pondering, but I believe there's more things that you could put in there than you could shoe leather that out a little more than I did there. So in other words, if I feel like I can't give, what am I doing with my discretionary income? I guess it's good for us to stop and think about that. How much am I spending on myself? This is outside of providing for my family. If you're a father here with a row of children, you're probably going to tell me not much. But I think it's good for us to think about that in light of our whether we can give or not. Many of us were taught to be frugal, and that's good. But I'm afraid for many of us that has carried over into our giving. We're frugal and we take it all the way across. We can't. We're used to pinching everywhere, so we pinch in our giving. I've been affected by that. And I don't know if you can relate to that or not. So you feel like you have to squeeze, so you squeeze there too. I think I'm missing it in that. Here's another one. Maybe you have this one all figured out. Is what about children giving? It's interesting if you watch a young child and you read them a CAM story or something, they're willing to, they'll soon bring their whole allowance and give it to you to share. But somewhere along the line, they start seeing money differently. And they start grabbing for it instead of just giving it. But I believe this, I think about it myself, this principle could be, if we could get this principle when we're young, I believe it could carry with us. Maybe some of you youth have testimony of that. You can share later. But is there principles that you've been given that you just do naturally, just a normal way of life? That giving for you just comes natural. Another important part is, I believe, we just simply see ourselves as channels rather than it's not about me or you, but it's about the need. So we're simply a channel. And that's what I believe Jesus is saying here in Matthew 6. Take heed that ye do not your alms before men to be seen of them, otherwise ye have no reward of your Father which is in heaven. Therefore, when thou doest thine alms, do not sound a trumpet before thee, as the hypocrites do in the synagogues and in the streets, that they may have glory of men. Verily I say unto you, they have their reward. But when thou doest thine alms, let not thy left hand know what thy right hand doeth, that thine alms may be in secret, and thy Father which seeth in secret himself shall reward thee openly. I believe that's another important, very important part. Isn't something that we proclaim. And I don't know what to do with this one, but what about all these sales that go on for fundraising? Is it, how do you, I mean, a lot is raised, a lot of needs are met through this, but it sure can put someone on the spotlight. My question is, are these platforms biblical? I think it's especially where you get into where someone actually buys something, they turn around and resell it again and keeps going. Can I give without? Why couldn't I just give without that? I think another important question is who should I give to? We see that we need to give. Does it matter who I give to? Does that require stewardship? Or does it not matter? It says in Galatians 6:10, as we have therefore opportunity to do good unto all men, especially unto them who are of the household of faith. So I believe we, if you want to draw a diagram, you start with your local brotherhood and then you work your way out. If the needs aren't being met here, we have serious needs here, but yet we're sending everything out. I think we're missing it. One of the I don't observe this very much anymore, but if you ever observed an Amish barn fire in the days after that, I think they gave us a perfect example. I don't think you get much better example how this fleshes out. They knew how to pull together, and in a few days it's back up and going. What about the cost of, you want to talk to Clinton, he can help you out with this, but the cost of maintaining a church? Over the years it costs something. Do we just come here and enjoy that, or are we responsible? Medical needs? Do we see our medical fund as our insurance, or is it an opportunity to share with each other? What a blessing to be able to help each other out in that way. Or it could be other losses. Could be widows. Just a verse here in Corinthians 16:1, now concerning the collection for the saints, as I have given order to the churches of Galatia, even so do ye. Upon the first day of the week, let every one of you lay by him in store, as God hath prospered him, that there be no gathering when I come. It's interesting how that first day of the week, Sunday collection, is clearly laid out there, principle that was practiced. So I see that as a great way to give. Neither is it have to be a stopping point there. One thing we have probably practiced that some, but we don't run into a lot where we're sharing with another here at Harmony, where we lift an offering for another need, another congregation. But it can happen, and that's can be a great way where we reach out beyond. Could be other like-minded churches and missions, or charities, organizations. Question here would be, should we help anyone, or should we use wisdom? Not every organization is very frugal with their the way funds are used. I think we should use wisdom there. And the question could be what are the needs? Is there a need there or not? I believe the needs are endless. But what's the need of that organization? What about just giving to random people we meet? Somebody comes up to you and needs help, you just, of course, we don't carry cash anymore. I do believe you have to use wisdom on that one. You might be buying cigarettes and drugs if you just, as much as we would like to help people, and not saying that you help someone and it doesn't work out, mean that we have to live in condemnation because of that. It's unfortunate that a few make it hard for helping the genuine need. There's a verse here in Corinthians 10:12 that I'd like to consider. For we dare not make ourselves of the number or compare ourselves with some that commend themselves, but they measuring themselves by themselves and comparing themselves among themselves are not wise. I believe we can take that with our giving. We have different opportunities and abilities, and I believe we can leave it. If I'm giving myself to the Lord, like I said earlier, and giving where I can, we'll leave it at that. We're not outdoing our brother or expecting more of them than we're able to do ourselves, or however you might want to look at it. The other thing, sometimes, in order for us to give, we might need to be on the receiving end. If there's no receiving, there's no giving. And that in itself takes a humility to be willing to receive. I think we can be proud, self-sufficient men, and we won't receive. So I think there's something for us to consider. Just a couple verses yet from Proverbs to think about. He that hath pity upon the poor lendeth unto the Lord, and that which he hath given will he pay him again. He that hath pity upon the poor lendeth unto the Lord. Beautiful. And that which he hath given will he pay him again. It's like you're going to get a blessing one way or the other here. He that hath a bountiful eye shall be blessed, for he giveth of his bread to the poor. Maybe we need to pray for a bountiful eye. I believe God can bring needs to us. I'd like to add this. With my responsibilities in the last couple of years, I've been humbled to see the way giving has happened and the way the many needs that have gotten met here has been humbling to me. So God bless you in your giving. I'd like to look yet at Acts 20. I like this passage here, Paul, before he's leaving here. Acts 20, I'm just going to read 17 and 18 to get the context here. And from Miletus he sent to Ephesus, and called the elders of the church. And when they were come to him, he said unto them, ye know from the first day that I came into Asia, after what manner I have been with you at all seasons. Now jump down to verse 32. And now, brethren, I commend you to God and to the word of his grace, which is able to build you up and give you an inheritance among all them which are sanctified. Notice what he says here, next verses. I have coveted no man's silver or gold or apparel. Yea, ye yourselves know that these hands have ministered unto my necessities, and to them that were with me. I have showed you all things, how that so laboring ye ought to support the weak, and to remember the words of the Lord Jesus, how he said, it is more blessed to give than to receive. And when he had thus spoken, he knelt down and prayed with them all, and they all wept sore, and fell on Paul's neck and kissed him, sorrowing most of all the words which he spake, that they should see his face no more, and they accompanied him unto the ship. Notice his final words here. He didn't covet anyone's silver or gold or apparel. And their hands have ministered unto my necessities. And it's more blessed to give than to receive. So may we be, by God's grace, be cheerful givers. Let's kneel for prayer. Father in heaven, we come to you at the close of this service. Thank you, Lord, for again ministering to us. Thank you for your grace, your mercy, your love that's been extended to each one of us. Thank you for Jesus, that he gave himself for us, that we can have life and have it more abundantly. Lord, help us to have a bountiful eye. Help us to have a desire to give, Lord, and be able to use what we have and be able to give of our loaves and of our fishes and allow you to multiply them. Pray a special blessing in each one of us. Help us to be faithful to you and help us to be cheerful givers. Oh, in Jesus' precious name, amen.